The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
It is nice to have you with us on another edition of the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. They're located in Lewis Center, and they offer you a free consultation with no obligation at all. Talk to them about investing, working toward retirement, financial independence. Where are they located? Lewis Center, just off Route 750, not far from 23 and 270. Again, free consultation. How do you set it up? You call their office. The phone number is 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. You can also make your appointment online at aptuswealth.com. That web address is Aptus, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. And Josh, as we talk here today on Friday, March the 22nd, we have had what they're telling me will be the best year in the stock market so far, or the best week so far, the best week so far this year in the stock market, even though stocks are back down a little bit today from their record high of all the major indexes yesterday. I got to believe that's related somewhat to what Fed Chairman Jerome Powell said this week, optimistic that maybe they're going to start cutting rates in the summertime, I guess, now.
Yeah, which we kind of predicted before, right? Yeah. We thought that we wouldn't get a rate cut until the second half of the year, at least until May, and it looks like that'll still be the case, which, you know, the big movers this year so far have been growth stocks, and they were the big movers yet again. And those obviously are impacted by interest rates significantly because of those ones that are using typically the most leverage to do what they're doing. So, yeah, good news for them. And it seems, you know, as I talk to clients and I talk to folks around, their big concern is, you know, I didn't anticipate that the market was going to do this well to begin with because mm-hmm. there's so many other things that are challenging us. You know, as we, I'm sure you talk a lot about on your show, the election and all the polarity that's going on with that, is along with the geopolitical issues around the world and what's happening with interest rates. But yet the stock market seems to continue to set high after high after high. So their concern is, well, what do I do now? Is it now overheated? When is the shoe going to fall?
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who was involved at the highest levels of investing for a major company in Columbus in 2019 and a couple months before the pandemic in 2020. And he was talking at that time about how the Fed just kept buying treasuries and buying bonds and buying assets. And he was somewhat surprised at that. Now we have from the chairman of the Fed, Jerome Powell, on Wednesday saying that they're going to taper off and they're going to shed more bonds than once expected. The story from Reuters says that Powell is more explicit in these remarks than he has been previously, that they have shed $1.4 trillion of bonds rolling off the Fed's balance sheet. What does that mean in layman's terms? Are they paying those bonds off, or how do they get them off their balance sheet?
Yeah, so in simple terms, you talk about, you'll hear terms like quantitative tightening, quantitative easing.
Yeah, this is a period of, they say, quantitative tightening.
Okay, so in quantitative tightening, what they're doing is taking money out of the money supply.
Okay.
So they do that because if you think about it, just simple supply and demand. Mm-hmm. If we have more dollars in the market, that's more supply to buy goods and services. Well, if you're trying to lower inflation because demand is higher than supply, You need to take some of those dollars out of the market. And one of the ways that the Fed can do that is by adding to their balance sheet, which essentially means that the money, I know this sounds crazy, but the money that the government is borrowing, the Fed says, well, we'll borrow it so that we hold it on our balance sheet versus somebody else. And then they can move that money back and forth. So when they do quantitative easing, they say, well, we're going to put more money back into the market than they can be spent out and about. Now, the problem with that is when you have too much money on, you're trying to lower, let me say it this way. When you're trying to lower inflation, mm-hmm. the Fed says, we're going to take money out of the economy. They go, everything looks good now. So we're going to put some money back into the economy. Well, if they do that too quickly, they can kind of overshoot the runway and it can actually have almost a doubled down catastrophic effect. And that's what we've been talking about for the better part of 3 years, about how are we going to come in for this soft landing.
Right? Yes.
And that's what they're trying to do. And if you look throughout history, there's been many times where we got that wrong. Back in the 70s, which mm-hmm. is when Volcker had to come in. We did it back in, I believe, the late teens, somewhere in the late teens.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to avoid that. But what they're saying by saying we're going to start lowering interest rates is not only going to lower interest rates, but we're going to start easing our policy on tightening down the economy. But we're going to cautiously be optimistic about when and where we're going to do that.
So our main topic here is always geared toward financial independence later on, investing toward retirement, drawing income out in retirement from an array of investments. Inflation, getting that under control, is certainly a good thing for retirees because you want your money to be able to go as far as it can go. And if prices are continually going up, and that's what inflation is, that's bad for retirees. So have we gotten to a point where we are so hyper reactive to things like, I look at the markets yesterday and they're way up. Okay, so are they way up because there's been a long view of where the economy is and this tells us that things are really promising and so now people are investing in the market, or are we so hyperactive that we've reacted to something that Jerome Powell said on a Wednesday and that explains why everything is up is on a Thursday, but he could say something else or something else could happen and woo, down we could go again. Like, are we too reactive to trying to read what they're doing or based off of trying to react off what he's saying they're doing?
In short, yes, we're far too reactive. I've heard, I think it was Warren Buffett that said, in the short run, the market is like gambling in the lottery. In the long run, it's, I can't remember his exact words, but it's something to the effect of, it's more like a mathematician's game. And ultimately, that's what we're doing. You know, there's all these old kind of adages in the investment world, and they, we say things like, well, buy in the rumor and sell in the news.
Mm.
Well, there's a lot of that going on. You'll see the market, well, we think Jerome Powell's going to say this, but then he doesn't say it, and then the market goes one direction. Or we think he's going to say it, and he does say it, and then the market goes in another direction. Those short-term gyrations give us a lot of heart problems, but at the end of the day, they're not really that relevant to the way that you invest your money in the long run. Now, what you believe the long-term plan is on Jerome Powell's approach to interest rates could have a factor on the way that you invest, but don't pay attention to week or day to day. It really isn't that important.
Yeah, sure. And at Aptus, I know because I'm a client, they do a periodic checkup at an appropriate time of where your money is invested, but you can do that too often. You can be too reactive. You can check on things too often. You can move your money around. And then all you end up doing is most likely, if you're doing it, instead of having a professional investment advisor like Josh doing it, is that you're going to, that's basically market timing. And you're going to miss that because a lot of the gains in markets over the years have been, you know, in a few days of the year, and you've got to be in or you miss those gains. Those are things you can talk about with Josh and his team when you have your free no-obligation consultation. Set that up at 614-917-1040. 614-917-1040, that's the number for Aptus. They're located just off Route 750, not far at all from 23 and 270. Okay, so as we look at where we are, I do see that reading of tea leaves. We thought they were going to cut rates in March. They didn't cut rates in March. Now everybody's like super happy that, okay, based on what he said Wednesday, ah, the rate cuts are coming in June or they're coming in July. They're not going to wait until the fall. Again, I don't know. Like, do the economic numbers bear that out, or might he have to come back and say, we changed our mind. We didn't see what we need to see.
He could absolutely change his mind. And I think it's important. And now I recall that quote that Warren Buffett said. I believe he was paraphrasing Ben Graham. He said, in the short run, the market is a voting machine. And in the long run, it's a weighing machine. And the importance of that is sometimes we get caught up in the static where we want to be smarter than the average bear and say, well, what does this mean? If interest rates do this or this does that or this does that, how should I be invested? When in reality, let's not lose sight of what are we investing in? We're investing in companies. Mm-hmm. What's important to a company? That they make money. So the weighing machine portion of this is buy companies at good prices that have strong barriers to entry that will last a long, long time, and buy the company that you believe in. And that's not what we typically do. We almost talk about the market as this like living, breathing creature. Like we're just investing in the market. We're not investing in the market. We're investing in companies. Now, in the short run, though, pundits will say the argument is, sure, you can buy individual companies, but in the short run, you know, they kind of react similarly to the market anyway, or in the long run they do, or, you know, pick an adage. It really doesn't matter. But ultimately, the only types of investments we really need to be focusing on as it relates to interest rates, the virility of the economy, et cetera, would be, you know, when do I want to, you know, refinance my mortgage? What should I be doing in bonds? That's important. Interest rates have a very clear and dramatic impact on bonds. What should I be doing with my cash right now? But we're talking about 10, 20 year money. Don't change your approach. Buy good companies, hold them, make subtle adjustments where necessary, and you'll be rewarded handsomely.
You know, I'm curious, like companies want to make money, and companies that do make money, and Apple makes a ton of money, and Apple's been super, you know, innovative over the years, and they're so innovative that now things that they innovated that took the marketplace by storm, like an iPod, are obsolete. Like nobody I know has got an iPod anymore. Your phone is your iPod. And, yeah. You know, that technology has migrated over to the phone. And I don't really want to get into the weeds of the lawsuit because that's just, you know, not really that interesting. But the federal government has filed, the U.S. Justice Department, joined by 16 states yesterday, filed this 88-page antitrust lawsuit against Apple, alleging that they have unfair business practices that disadvantage their competition. And I'm like, well, isn't that kind of their job to like beat their competition at everything? So, you know, I'm not saying that everything they do is something that I would endorse because, again, I don't know the nuances of this, but it's almost like companies, when they get so good at what they do, there are so many complaints about how good they are at it that they then become the target for being great at it.
Well, I feel like that's the case with everybody, including people, right? We hate to see people just do so well, it's almost annoys us. So we try and knock them down a peg. And Apple is no different. This happened with Microsoft back during the late 90s, early 2000s. I think the takeaway, and I don't know the nuances of the lawsuit either, you know, it's not a matter of whether or not they're innovating beyond their peers. It's a matter of, are they doing things to directly eliminate their competition in a malicious way? And that's a shade of gray for sure. But let's say, for example, you know, they go and buy parts that are required to make a phone and they buy all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then how could you compete with them? And I don't know what that part would be.
Yeah, right.
But that would be malicious. And I understand why somebody would want to regulate that. But you're right. It's a very subtle shades of gray, right?
Well, and they have a lot of different, you know, offshoots to what they do. They have Apple Wallet, and I can see where, you know, they could advantage that. Only their users, you know, you'd have to use that particular app or whatever. And again, I'm not saying the lawsuit doesn't have merit. I'm just saying that it strikes me that when companies become that profitable, and Apple's been a juggernaut for its investors, has it not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, that's the old, you know, if people remember even the movie Forrest Gump, like that's supposedly how he, in the movie, there's this quick joke, like I invested in a fruit company, and he's
now
got,
I don't
like,
have to worry about money anymore.
Don't worry about money anymore, because and they've got the little Apple logo on there. So that's what every investor's looking for, is that company that is small now grows big and all that. That's kind of what investing is all about, is finding a company where you, the old tradition, buy low, sell high.
Well, now the juggernaut's been, you know, Nvidia, right? And
yep.
And who will know if at some point they're, you know, changing the game in AI, and maybe they get so big that they will be the next Apple, and there will be lawsuits against the way that they handle AI, et cetera. But it doesn't change the perspective of the way that you should invest. I think, you know, you should focus your energies for the most part when it comes to financial planning on what is your goal, attach a purpose to the money there has to be purpose-driven mm-hmm. investing. And then it's easy to make the alterations or the adjustments where necessary. For example, if you're saving for your kid's college and your kid's going to college in 1 year, you shouldn't be talking market at all unless you're just into gambling and day trading.
Mm-hmm.
You should be talking about other things. So how well-versed are you on what are the highest generating short-term guaranteed instruments available? Because that's what's important for that. Now, it's not sexy. It's not exciting. You don't have to do a lot of research to figure that out. But that is just as equally as important. And I think, you know, there's kind of a conversation that we have in the office, and we had it today, about how usually 5% of your investment ends up getting 100% of your bandwidth in your conversations. For example,
interesting.
Nobody wants to talk about why invest in the S&P 500 index fund. They want to talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Well, why? Because
it's sexier, it sounds more cutting edge, and maybe the returns are higher.
Well, I mean, biblically, what are the two most powerful things on earth, right? It's fear and greed.
Fear and greed.
Well, it checks both the boxes, doesn't it? We're fearful that the U.S. dollar is going to collapse, so I got to invest in something. And I also would like to quadruple my money by tomorrow, which Bitcoin, much like going to a slot machine, offers that allure. So we end up focusing all our time on that. If I call a client today and I say, hey, I really want to talk to you about this new hedging strategy that we have. It's a hedge fund. And what they do is these are insiders. They're insiders only usually available to the wealthy.
Mm.
But because of this insert fancy pants little thing, and all of a sudden everybody wants to talk about that and go, well, I want to get in on that. But you can only put 5% of your money into it. Wow, it must be really good if I'm only allowed to put 5%.
Yeah,
and you end up spending most of your time talking about things that aren't actually going to achieve your goals. Unfortunately, good quality financial planning and investing isn't that exciting. It's very boring. It doesn't mean that you don't need to do the math, but it's not that sexy.
Yeah, but it is essentially important, particularly if you are looking at retirement, maybe in the window that I am, maybe somewhere, you know, 7 to 10 years out, and you're afraid of making a big mistake, and you're afraid of not having time to come back from that big mistake. You know enough to know that you don't know enough. And that's kind of where I was. It's where my wife and I were. We were managing it ourselves, and we just got to the point where we're like, wow, this could really end bad for us if we make that mistake. So don't. When you're offered a free, no-obligation consultation, take advantage of it. Aptus Wealth Management, that's Josh's firm, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Or you can make your appointment online. Their web address is Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Josh joins me Mondays at 12:30 for Money Monday, and this show replays at noon on Saturdays. So tell your friends or listen to the replay. And you can always access the Aptus Retirement Blueprint radio show at 989theanswer.com and listen to it on demand on podcasts throughout the week whenever it suits your purposes. You know, we talked about Apple and we talked about NVIDIA, and those have been two juggernauts. Amazon's another juggernaut, Microsoft too. There's also this thought out there that, well, if I buy that company, I'm going to buy it at a premium, and maybe I can find another company that does what they do and, you know, get the bigger upside from that. But I don't know if it's a problem. I don't know if that's a wise strategy. But the thing that I would wonder about is, well, if those big companies have such a big market share and they have such name recognition, is it wise to try to look for something that might be the next? Or is it, as you said, maybe not as sexy, maybe not as, you know, might not make 20% on it, but ride the horse that's winning the race already? How do you sort that out as you guys are evaluating companies? Because there often are companies that overtake the leader in the marketplace and become that company down the road.
Well, there's a place for both. But I think, you know, as you're looking at your future, do you want your future to be a maybe, or do you want it to be a pretty darn certainly?
Yeah.
And I think most people would say they want it to be pretty darn certainly, but we also want to have that potential of kind of hitting that one out of the park. And I think there's some room for that, but we don't want to use any money for those types of investments that you're not willing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do most people in Ohio drive Hondas and not some company you've never heard of before? Well, because reliability in your car is important. And I'm not saying that Honda's the only car that's reliable, but there's a reason why there's brand recognition there and why people lean towards it. I think, you know, in our space, unlike what most people would like to say, 1 or 2% over a long period of time, over and above and beyond what you would normally get, is a dramatic amount.
Yeah.
anybody who's telling you, well, you can order, you can earn a guaranteed, you know, 5% a month. Well, sometime just hop on a calculator and just type in 5% gains every single month and see what that happens. I've seen it one time. What is it? If you, would you rather have $1 million today or a penny that doubles every single day for a month? And a penny that doubles every single day for a month is like $3 million or something like that.
Yeah.
But yet we'll constantly buy these, you know, programs for $19.95. Learn how to double your money every week. If they could double their money every week, they could have started with a penny and they'd be worth billions of dollars by now. They wouldn't be worried about selling you something for $19.95. Well, where you can really make a difference, if you really funnel it down, is, okay, I know I've already done the planning to determine that I should be in the market with this chunk of money. Knowing that, I know that I want it diversified amongst different things. How do I pick those different things?
Mm-hmm.
Who do I use to manage those different things? And I want to pick the best in the class. Now, the best in the class might only beat the rest of the class by 1%. Okay, so it's an A student versus a B student. Over time, that can be as dramatic as tens of millions of dollars, potentially, believe it or not. It's just one notch. And then similarly, how can I make a dramatic impact on how I'm investing my dollars and saving taxes? If you do all of these things correct, how do I collect my Social Security? How do I save taxes? How do I invest appropriately? How do I manage risk? If you do everything correctly, you're talking about little micro improvements across the board, make dramatic improvements. But what we all really would like to do is, what do I invest my money in? I get this conversation all the time. What can I put my money in? It's not a lot of money. I'm not going to be crazy. I just want to throw five grand at something that I can, you know, I'd like to double it this year. I mean, but I'm willing to take a little bit of risk. Like somehow it's that easy.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw $5,000 at something and double it.
Yeah, like you have a choice to make that gain, right?
Okay, well, let's go to Vegas and let's throw it down. Well, I mean, I don't want to be stupid with it. Well, the way you're describing it already does, unfortunately, sound kind of stupid. You have to be disciplined. You have to live within your means. I know it doesn't sound fun, but that's the way you achieve your goals.
Yeah, it reminds me of that old adage, like, you know, a 1,000-mile journey begins with like a couple tiny steps out the door. It does. And retirement is a journey, depending on when you start saving. I mean, if you come to the party so late that you really don't give your investment advisor a chance to make the gains that you need to have that income stream when you're retired. But that's why we talk about the discipline of getting started. And that's why we talk about, you know, making wise choices when Josh and his team come up with your respective Aptus blueprint and you choose that course, but you are on the same page with them because you guys have talked out with them. So what Sherry and I did, the strategy and the logic behind the strategy. And I say all the time, peace of mind. We understand it. It's so much easier to live with a plan when you understand the plan. So that's what you get when you go in for the free consultation. Set it up 614-917-1040. 614-917-1040. We touched on, before we just end this segment, we touched on a minute ago, Bitcoin. It strikes me we used to talk a lot about cryptocurrency. And cryptocurrency is like kind of moved off to the side. It's like fallen out of favor. I don't know if that's the Sam Bankman-Fried trial or what it is, but like it's still out there. Like it's still an option for people. But what do you credit to the kind of falling off the radar of cryptocurrency, if I'm assessing that correctly? Right,
yeah, now I would say it's actually making a resurgence, at least amongst all the social media platforms, because it's had quite a run, you know, set another, not an all-time high, but it's surged quite a bit. And, you know, then all the pundits are saying, well, that's because, you know, look at all the things that are happening in government, the pushback on the U.S. dollar and where we're going to be. Well, I'm here to tell you, the U.S. dollar isn't that great, but I was in Europe last week.
Mm-hmm.
And the dollar to the euro right now is $1.09, right? So it takes $1.09 to get 1 euro. I went to Italy in 2012, and it was $1.30. So The dollar actually is pretty strong relative to the rest of the world. Now, I'm not advocating that we're making sound financial decisions, but what I am saying is the dollar isn't as weak across the world as everybody makes it out to be. Now, you know, I think Bitcoin's resurgence, do I think it's based upon the actual mathematics, or I'm just using crypto Bitcoin as kind of a broad brushstroke? I would be very careful, because remember, Bitcoin at one point was way, way up before it was way, way down.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's climbing back up again. It's unregulated, which is, people will say, is the benefit. The downside of that is big traders with lots of money can front run that. So they can go and say, it's great, it's great. Everybody buys it. They get out and there's no SEC regulation.
Oh boy. Yeah. Then the bottom drops out. Make smart decisions. And, you know, I would say for me, let someone who really knows, who's in this every single day, who's assessing it, who's analyzing it, who has a proven track record of success, do that for you. I personally, obviously, give Josh and the Aptus team my highest endorsement. They've got my money. I mean, that's the ultimate demonstration of my confidence in them. Set up your consultation, 614-917-1040, or do it on the web at their web address, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Disclaimer aside, and now we are ready to roll on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. Bruce Hooley, along with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management, thanks for joining us, and we appreciate your time. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking about investing, working toward retirement. It's lurking out there, hopefully for everybody. You may have visions of how your retirement will work. How realistic are those visions? And do you know what you're doing as you work toward that financial independence, that income stream in retirement after you stop working every day? If you have questions about that, and I can't imagine that you do not, because I certainly did, a great way to have those questions answered, to get information, and then to make a great decision is to go with the Aptus team, 614-917-1040. 614-917-1040 is how you call and set up your free, no-obligation consultation. You can also make your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. They're located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750, not far from the 270-23 interchange. So let's just hit what most people think as we start out this particular portion of the program, Josh. I can't retire, or at least I can't retire and live the way I want to live unless I have $1 million. Do I need $1 million to retire and be happy in the state of Ohio or anywhere? When people ask you that, how would you respond?
Depends. It depends on how much you need to live on every single month, right?
And when I can't retire at 20 if you don't, you know, have a good chunk of money, but, well, you know.
That depends too, right?
That's,
I mean,
right.
If you want to live out of your van and live on, you know, $1,000 a month, you probably can live on $1 million for the rest of your life. You know, this is where we all like to create these neat and tidy little boxes for us to put ourselves in and check the box and say, well, we've achieved that. And it used to be, well, if you have $1 million, you're a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 2 million, you're a multimillionaire, which means you're really wealthy. And as long as I can get to there, then I'm somehow good. And the unfortunate reality of that is maybe or maybe not. I can tell you that most people in the United States do not have $1 million. But I can also tell you that there's a whole bunch of people in the United States that are retired. So does that mean that the only people that are over the age of 65 and retired all have $1 million? Well, of course not. So how can they retire off of less and others can't? Well, a couple obvious things. If your house is paid off and you live in a modest house and you have no debt and your Social Security between you and your spouse is $4,000 or $5,000 a month, you might not need – I know very significant amount of people that are retired on Social Security alone and living just fine, and you would never guess that that's all they're living on.
Mm-hmm.
And I know other people that if they didn't have at least $10,000 a month, they would really struggle, which that's a different conversation.
Yeah, the Akron Beacon Journal has done a study, and they guide people to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they estimate that in Ohio, annual cost of living is $53,000. Cost of living after using Social Security income is $31,000. How much do you need in savings to retire? They calculated at $780,000. That's your cost of living after using Social Security income multiplied by 25. I don't know if any of those numbers are anywhere close. I think it all depends, as you say, on lifestyle. They list Ohio as number 17 for retirement savings, just ahead of Texas, where you need a little bit more, and Kentucky, where you need a little bit more, and Kentucky, and just behind South Dakota, where you need a little bit less. Generally, would you agree that Ohio is somewhere down there in the teens in terms of what people need to retire based on cost of living?
Yeah, I would say Ohio is kind of a good, you know, litmus test of kind of in the middle of what it requires in the United States. You know, certain things that I see in statistics that always kind of confuse me is, on one hand, they'll say, well, you need at least, you know, $708,000 to retire. But then your average Social Security in that example you just said was only like $20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I would think it would be very, very difficult to acquire roughly $800,000 in investments if your Social Security when you retired only ended up being about $20,000. Because that means if your Social Security is only about $20,000 a year, then that means that you had one person that didn't work, the other person who did, and between the two of them, their Social Security is only about $1,600 a month, which means one of them is making, call it, you know, $1,100, and the other one's getting $500.
Mm-hmm.
That means they didn't make a whole lot of money while they were working. That's a very, very low Social Security bar. I would say for the average person that's listening that made $50,000 or $60,000 a year while they were working, their Social Security is going to be far north of that individually, which would mean if you made $60,000 a year while you were working and your spouse did not work, your Social Security is over $2,000 a month, and your spouse is going to get at least another $1,000, which means you're at $36,000 a year, which means the $53,000 that you require is not $30,000. Now we're talking about $53,000 less than $36,000. So, you know, sometimes these, I don't know where they're getting all of these numbers where they're pulling in, they're saying, well, we know that this is how much the average, you know, Ohioan needs is $53,000. We've talked about this a lot, mm-hmm. average versus median,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The easiest explanation is if Elon Musk walks into our office right now, we all have a very much higher average net worth.
Yeah.
But our median net worth doesn't change at all.
No.
And I think that's what they do is they take the average that somebody needs to retire on, which probably isn't, the median probably isn't $53,000. Then they take the average Social Security, which is not the median, and they kind of use them interchangeably. I would say on average, the average Ohioan that I see, if they have lived their life the way that most people do in mm-hmm. Columbus, Ohio, and I'm not talking about the people who are living in $1 million houses, because that's not normal.
It's not normal for most people.
Not normal.
Nope.
So the average home in Ohio right now is probably close to, or at least in our ears, probably somewhere around $350,000 to $400,000. Thank you, COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a $400,000 house. You have that paid off. Then you have, you know, your Social Security. The average that I see, people's Social Security is well north of $3,000 between them and their spouse. And then they have another $500,000 and they're living just fine. So don't think you need $1 million to retire. You may, but you probably don't.
Yeah, and one of those places where you can get the answers and go through these formulas and talk about it and set up an income stream in retirement, of course, is through a professional financial advisor like Josh and the Aptus team. The free consultation, well worth your time, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040 to set that up. Are we in a financial time now, Josh, where, and does this change when it is, when it makes sense to start taking Social Security, or is that a fluid time that maybe 5 years ago was a great time? You take Social Security before you take disbursements from your retirement investments. Now we're in a different time. You take your retirement and you don't take your Social Security yet because you have the option to take your Social Security at age 62. You have to take it at age 70. Obviously, the longer the wait, you wait, the more you're going to get. And then there are people who are afraid it's going to run out and you're never going to get it. So does that change the answer to when should I take my Social Security?
I don't think the time has changed anything other than during the Obama administration, he did change a lot of the kind of nuances that you could do to Social Security. And I won't go too deep in the weeds on this, but there used to be this whole methodology amongst a husband and wife where you could do this file and suspend and file and restrict and do all this sorts of stuff where you could actually, you know, really take advantage of. You know, legally, it was the way that Social Security worked. You could take advantage of Social Security and make a lot more money off of it.
Hmm.
Obama changed that, eliminated a lot of that. But beyond that, just looking at Social Security and saying, when should I take it? I can take it at 62. I can take it at 70. When should I take it? There's a lot of pieces and parts that go into that answer. It's mm-hmm. not as simple as just saying, well, you know, I heard they're getting rid of it, so I'm going to take it as soon as I can. I burned the hands worth two in the bush, right? When are you going to retire? Because if you're not full retirement age, which for almost everybody listening at this point is 67, mm-hmm. if you haven't already started collecting mm-hmm. it, there's income restrictions. So if you're saying, I want to take it at 65 because I could really use the extra money, but I'm going to keep working and you make $60,000 a year, you might have all of your Social Security recaptured because there's an income limit. And that income limit is essentially, for easy math, every $2 you make over $20,000 a year, they take a dollar of your Social Security back. So let's think about that. If you're making $60,000 a year and your Social Security is 20, you're just
not
lost
get
it
any
all.
Of it.
You yeah. just got it all. You got yeah. it all taken back. So that's a piece of the puzzle. Next piece of the puzzle is, and we don't know the answer to this, how long do you think you're going to live? Because the break even point, you know, if you take it at 62, you're getting money for 4 years longer than if you took it at 66. If you take it at 70, you're getting it for 8 years longer than if you took it at 62, or at 70 rather. there's a break-even point where, you know, where the amount of money that I totally collect, the amount of food that I ate at the buffet, I had to sit there for a period of time before it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And for Social Security, it's about 82 and a half. So if you say nobody in my family lives past the age of 75, unless you just need the cash flow, there is no point in you waiting any longer. Go collect your Social Security because you're never going to get more out of it than you would have if you would have waited. Now, some people just simply have to wait until 70 because they need the cash flow to survive. But my point in all of this is everybody's answer is different. And we can dive even and nerd out a little bit more and say, well, what about the impact of minimum required distributions? And remember, I'm kind of combining a lot of stuff here together, but minimum required distributions is that age, now 72, on its way to 75, that used to be 70 and a half, where the federal government says you have to start taking money out of your 401k and your IRAs. Well, if I take my Social Security early, then I'm not putting much of a strain on my 401k because I don't need as much money, which means my minimum required distribution is getting bigger. And will that negatively impact my taxes in the future? And you might hear that and say, well, isn't having more money always good? I would rather have more money. Well, being able to keep more money is always good. So I want to utilize the amount of money that I have in the most tax efficient way that I can. So it could actually make sense to take the money later, wait until you're 70, mm-hmm. bleed down your retirement accounts a little bit so that your taxes over the duration of your life are actually better. And that's very hard to explain without an illustration, of course, and showing it on paper. But just know this. There are a myriad of things that are going into when and how you should collect your Social Security, your life expectancy, your date of retirement, how much your Social Security is relative to the amount of income that you need,
mm-hmm.
and the size of your retirement accounts. You have to know at least those four things, probably more, but at least those four things to really come up with an answer on when you should collect.
So I'm intrigued by the scenario where a person makes $60,000 and so every dollar they make in Social Security gets recaptured. We hear this phrase double dipping, where you're getting, you know, I don't know if that double dipping applies to Social Security and income, but I'm thinking of a business owner, somebody who's been successful, they set up their own business. And, you know, even at age 70, like their business is still producing income and they've got income coming in. That Social Security that gets recaptured, given back to the government, is there any kind of way that that can be, I don't know, deducted? Or is that person just like, sorry about it, you're successful, you paid into the system, you're not going to get a dollar out of it?
Well, first note that that only occurs up until full retirement age. So if you're 70 years old, that's beyond your full retirement age being 67 for most, between 66 and 67, depending on when you were born. But once you exceed that, you can make as much money as you want and there's no recapture.
Okay.
It's prior to that that's the problem.
Okay.
Also note it's only on earned income. So if you retire at 55 and you're living off your investments and a pension and life's great and you want to collect at 62, but you're, let's say you're uber wealthy and you're still living on $1 million a year, no harm, no foul, you're fine. It's only earned income. So the challenge here is this is the story that I hear the most. And this is usually that people come into my office after the fact and they go, what happened here? This seems like I'm getting, you know, cheated.
Yeah.
I was an engineer making $90,000 a year, $100,000 a year. I was working 80 hours a week. I couldn't do it anymore. It was killing me. I needed to retire. So what I determined was I can actually quit my full-time job at 62, go work as a consultant, make 50, working a lot less hours, put some more time back in my bank mm-hmm. rather than my company's bank, and combine that with Social Security, and I'm making the same amount of money anyway. And then they go, well, I was making 50 or 60, and then I got this love letter in the mail 12 months later from Social Security saying, write us a check back for everything that we just paid you. Did I just get, is this a scam? did I get hosed? What happened?
You didn't talk to the right people is what it sounds like to me.
And unfortunately, that's the truth.
Yes.
Now, one thing I will tell you, the money didn't go away for good. What Social Security essentially does is they recalculate it as if you never took it. So you took it at 62. Remember, you would have made more money at 63, more money at 64, more mm-hmm. money at 65. Mm-hmm. You will get that increased number. But no, there's no deduction. You just send us the money back. Thanks for playing. You should have read the directions better.
Yeah. Well, we just pointed out the reason why it makes sense to sit with Josh and the Aptus team to take advantage of the free consultation on these matters. Because, look, this is not the same situation, but like my father tried to do something that made sense to him. And he put his home, you know, with my mom in the name of my brothers and I. And when he passed away, that was a headache for us because it would have just gone, you know, to mom. He didn't need to do that. He was trying to protect the home. It ended up, it worked out through some like legal loophole that we were able to find. One of my brothers is handicapped that allowed us an option that other people don't have. Bottom line is ask someone who knows, and that is why the consultation with Josh and the Aptus team makes sense. So you don't go off and do something and find out, oh, by the way, all that money that you got from Social Security, you got to send it back to us. 614-917-1040 to set up your consultation. 614-917-1040, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. They're located in Lewis Center, not far from 23 and 270, just off Route 750. As we assess all the different investment vehicles for people, I'm sure that there are certain vehicles that make sense for people as they approach retirement, that we've always had this kind of conventional, oh, that's when you want to get out of the market. That's when you want to get into safer investments. But, you know, there's annuities, there's bonds, there's treasuries, there's stocks, there's all this. Why would somebody who's younger want to be in something that presumably, maybe according to conventional opinion, is an investment that, oh, that's for somebody who's really right on top of retirement? Is it that simple to say, no, when you're young, you ought to be in the stock market, or you shouldn't be in an annuity, or you shouldn't be in a treasury or whatever? Or is that driven by market conditions at the time? And those can be smart decisions for people who might not be on the cusp of retirement.
Well, this might come as a shock, but we're not all the same. You know, we wear different shoes, we wear different pants, but yet somehow the way that we invest is supposed to be, well, I took this 8-question questionnaire and it told me this is where I'm supposed to be and this is where I should be in the end. You know, should people who are young be in stocks? Absolutely.
Yes.
Does that mean everybody who's young should be in stocks? Absolutely not. And let me give you a couple of examples. And I've said this many, many times on the show, so I apologize for sounding like just constantly repeating this. But the only thing worse than not buying companies via stocks is buying companies in the form of stocks and then selling them at the wrong time because you can't handle the volatility. There is a reason why the stock market over time averages one number and the average investor averages a number that's about a third of that number. And it's because volatility simply is not tolerable by some people. So you should not feel guilty about that. And I think a lot of people are almost peer pressured into investing into the market, knowing full well that they're kind of mental state or just who they are isn't really equipped to that. There's a reason why some people work for companies and some people are entrepreneurs. There's a reason why some people swing a hammer for a living and other people push a pencil. We're all different and our investing strategy should be the same way. But I think what ends up happening, unfortunately, is people will view the market and say, well, I'm not in the stock market, so I'm putting my money in the bank. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean there aren't things in the middle that might satisfy what you're looking for. So, you know, the beautiful part about, let's say, annuities, for example, are annuities the best solution for everybody? No, but would some people like to know that if I buy this annuity and if I put in the certain amount of money every single month, that when I reach retirement, I will get exactly this dollar amount for the rest of my life, no matter how long I live? Yeah, there's tons of people who would really like a pension, and that's what I just described. Is that the best investment for your rate of return over your lifetime? Is it the best investment for building an estate over your lifetime? No. But you might not care. And we can't compare ourselves to everybody else. You have to compare yourself to what it works for you. There are ways to invest in the market where you can hedge against loss.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe you can hedge enough against loss, dependent upon where the market is, to satisfy your ability to tolerate volatility, which you didn't even know was an option. The only thing I assure you is if you put your money in the bank and you earn, and I know we're earning more than this today, but if you look at history, you're not going to average much more than 2 or 3% in your money market accounts over time. If you believe that's going to reach your retirement goals, you're probably drastically mistaken, or at least you're doing yourself a great disservice. Instead of saving $500 a month, you might have been able to save $450. So don't pigeonhole yourself.
So I'm intrigued by your scenario there with the annuity where you get the guaranteed rate of return. And maybe, and we've talked before about fear drives a lot of people's investments, and sometimes it's irrational fear. And maybe it's the child of someone who got really hurt in the market because they made bad decisions. They weren't with a professional advisor or fiduciary, somebody who's legally obligated to do what's best for you. That's what you are at Aptus. And maybe the child has a visceral fear of the market and they're disciplined enough to start saving young enough where an annuity, even though, you know, if you look at the likelihood of the market continuing its returns, that it has historically returned over time, the annuity might like them, might allow them to have something that I think everyone likes to live with as opposed to uncertainty. And that is certainty, an absolute, you know, return that they're getting. Do you run into clients like that? Or do you run into people who, like you've said before, they sit down, the number one thing they want to know is, I want to make the most return I possibly can, right? Because that's typically stock market if they start early enough.
Yeah, I actually have a client I can think of right at the top of my head that has millions of dollars, plural. And he has, they, not he, has $0 in the stock market. Hasn't for 20 or 30 years. Mm. Likes it that way. He likes knowing this is the exact percentage that I'm earning. Now, what I will tell you about him, though, is he was a bank investor. So just put money in CDs, CDs, CDs. He was scared of anything else. Well, I think they say that fear is like an ocean that's an inch deep and a mile wide, right? And the only way that you learn that it's an inch deep and you're tolerable of it is education. So we were able to educate him on what his other choices were, and we essentially doubled his rate of return by just buying rate lock guaranteed fixed annuities. It's nothing special. They're CDs for all intents and purposes, but what we accomplished for him was gave him some tax deferral, which he didn't have with the CDs, and increased his interest rate, and still gave him all the guarantees he was looking for. So he's very, very happy doing that. His average rate of return, even today, is like 5%. He goes, okay, so what would I average in the market? Well, it all depends. I mean, in the long run, we're hoping for 8 or 9, but, you know, we really can point to some times where it's been less than that. He goes, yep, good with that. He's completely fine with that. And far be it from me to bend him over and tell him that he's got to, let me break your arms and tell you you need to be in the market. You do you, and that's fine. My job is simply to educate you on the choices and make sure that we stay within the general confines of what investments should look like and not do anything really foolish, but it's your choice.
And so much of that freedom of choice in terms of being able to take the guarantee of the lower return is predicated upon when you start. I mean, if you're going to start when you're, you know, 58, 59, there's a reason why you'd want the guaranteed return, but the upside, that would hurt you if you're not getting the major upside. The earlier that you start, Josh has always said, the best time to start is today. The next best time to start is tomorrow. Get with Aptus. Take advantage of the free consultation, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. You can make your appointment online, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Is there a season when people get more serious about retirement than not? I'm thinking around tax season, like maybe people might like prioritize it more because that's when they really sort of maybe take that one annual sit down and look at their finances.
You know, I wish there was, but there really isn't. I think there's a season of life. You know, when do we really start paying attention to what we eat? When it really starts being a problem and the doctor tells us we have to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when do we really start paying attention to finances? When we go, okay, well, we're 10 years out and I don't want to work for the rest of my life. Maybe I should start paying attention to it. And unfortunately, much like you said, and actually I'll repeat, you know, what I always say is the best time was yesterday. The next best time is today. I think we feel like we have as many todays to get started as we want. And that's just simply not the case. If you think back on your life and you look at your kids, for example, I have an 18-year-old who's graduating this year.
Mm-hmm.
You can appreciate this,
I'm sure. I can. I have an 18-year-old graduating this year as well.
He's still 3 in my eyes, you know? I mean, it's amazing how fast the 15 years went. So I would implore you not to wait another 15 years. In 15 years, you can make some dramatic improvements in your finances.
And here's the beauty. If you start early, you can start small. Like, that's the thing. Like, a small amount, you can start very, very small. The later you wait, the more you have to put toward it to get to where you want to get. Fiduciary, that's the way to go. Somebody who's legally obligated to do what's best for you, that's what they are at Aptus. They're located just off Route 750 in Lewis Center. Set up your free no-obligation consultation, 614-917-1040. Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Josh, thanks for your time today.
You as well. Thanks.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.